Philip II of Macedonia. Philip adds Upper Macedonia to his kingdom. In 558 BCE, it was still the early days of Philip's reign, and his Macedonian positions remained precarious. Philip had tasted victory and defeated the same Illyrians who had killed his brother, and for the moment, the Illyrian tribes were deterred from fresh attacks. Bardyllus the Illyrian vanishes from our sources after accepting the treaty imposed by Philip, and given that he was a very old man, he probably didn't live much longer. One charismatic leader had gone, but the Illyrians remained numerous and warlike, and as the years passed, other chiefs and kings would emerge and lead raids to the south. For the moment, Philip and his army were to be feared, but that would not last forever. To help cement the new peace for as long as possible, Philip married for the first time, taking his bride Odada, an Illyrian, presumably close kin to the important tribal leader, perhaps to Bardyllus himself. In addition to a wife, Philip gained a lot of territory, adding all the lands as far as Lake Lechnus in his kingdom. This included not simply the upper Macedonian tribes, but a number of communities of Illyrian speakers. The new western frontier of his kingdom would be shielded by a double line of mountains, crossed by just two passes suitable for an army. Internal communications were good, and work soon began to fortify the existing settlements and found new walled cities to act as garrisons. No Argrid king had asserted his claim to Upper Macedonia as strongly as the days of Alexander I. During Philip's reign, the local dynasties of this region disappeared altogether. Instead, the leading men of Upper Macedonia came to Philip's court to be companions of the king. His favor and the status they possessed at court and as senior men in the Macedonian army became far more important than old titles. As usual, we cannot trace this process, so we don't know whether the petty kingdoms were ever formally abolished or just slowly withered in the face of the new opportunities on offer. Philip may well have seemed the more attractive proposition than the domination of the Illyrians, and his victory had demonstrated his strength. The young king was enthusiastic, confident, and charming. He took a second wife, Philip, who was from Upper Macedonia region of Illyminia, most likely a member of its royal house. There is no sign of concerted resistance to Philip's takeover of Upper Macedonia, but that does not mean that all welcomed it. One of Philip's brothers went into exile and would fight against the king in years to come. On the other hand, even more of her relatives did very well through serving Philip. Probably the same pattern was reflected in the other kingdoms, with the vast majority accepting service with him, at least for the moment, while his power was growing. The encouragement for the leaders of the Upper Macedonians tribes to look to Philip for rewards and honor was just one aspect of major social change. The pastoralists of the area were made to move to the newly important walled cities and towns and cultivate the land. Years later, Alexander the Great is supposed to have reminded his truculent soldiers that Philip had changed them from wanderers and the city dwellers, herdsmen and the farmers, and replaced their animal skin clothes with respectable cloaks. All of these things were marks of civilization rather than barbarism. At the same time, the king shifted the population around. Settlers from Lower Macedonia were brought in to add numbers to the new and existing cities, and men from the regions of Upper Macedonia would later be sent as colonists elsewhere. The royal army was itself one of the main engines of social change. For Philip's control of all this territory greatly increased the manpower available to him. From now on, half of the regiments of the pike phalanx and half of the Macedonian cavalry were recruited from Upper Macedonia in units named after the regions. These formations mixed the settlers from the outside with local men, who would fight alongside each other, all looking to Philip to give them victory, glory, and plunder. But none of this was instant, and none of it was inevitable. Philip's early success could easily have turned into failure, just as it had for several of his other predecessors. And remember, he was only 24. Assassination remained as great a danger as it was for any Argrid, and there were plenty of foreign leaders and states ready to attack whenever they sensed an opportunity. If Philip was to bond the Upper Macedonian cantons to him, then his successes needed to continue, confirming his strength and also giving him the chance to reward loyal followers. All this meant that more war was almost inevitable, and the king's conspicuous bravery always put him at risk. One well-aimed arrow or spear thrust could end his life and leave him crippled and highly vulnerable to challengers. Philip was an enthusiastic diplomat and was later said that he was prouder of his successes in negotiation than his victories in battle. Yet this was the 4th century BCE, and diplomacy without threat of force was simply toothless. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question. Leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.